What happens when the very system designed to heal you becomes your greatest adversary? Picture a promising young dancer whose life is shattered by invisible pain, not from an accident or obvious disease, but from a condition so misunderstood that doctors dismiss it as hysteria, anxiety, or worse, attention seeking. This is the reality for millions of women navigating a medical landscape where their suffering is routinely questioned, minimized, or ignored entirely. The story isn't just about one woman's fight for diagnosis. It's an indictment of how centuries of gender bias in medicine continue to transform treatable conditions into life-destroying ordeals. When pain strikes without warning and no one believes you, you're forced into an impossible role, becoming both patient and detective, advocate and researcher, fighting not just disease, but the very professionals sworn to help you. One autumn morning, a college sophomore stepped into the shower when stabbing pain suddenly impaled her middle. The agony spread from her side to her belly to her back, accompanied by nausea and dizziness. Her legs trembled so violently she had to crawl across the bathroom floor. In the mirror, bloodless skin and hollow eyes stared back. For nearly a week, fever consumed her. At the emergency room, a doctor dismissed her as another bright and wound-tight college girl, assuming sexual activity despite her protests. She left with antibiotics and cranberry juice. A week later, delirious and desperate, she returned. A kinder doctor suggested an ovarian cyst, but certainty remained elusive. Facing the dean's ultimatum for medical leave, she had nowhere to go. Emancipated at 16, no real home existed. She promised her professor she'd return in spring. She never saw any of them again. Women's bodies have been treated as unreliable narrators for centuries. Since the 1800s, their symptoms have been medicalized, pathologized, and dismissed. The ailments Freud labeled hysterical, pelvic pain, vague abdominal discomfort, crushing fatigue, mirror what women report today. Even medical language betrayed bias. In Central Europe, the uterus was called a mutern, toad, believed to hop around causing chaos. Gilda Radner's story captures this deadly pattern. After infertility treatments, she developed symptoms cycling with her periods, severe fatigue, fever, stomach problems, debilitating leg pain. For 10 months, doctors dismissed her concerns as anxiety, prescribing antidepressants when she mentioned cancer fears, and calling her a very nervous, emotional girl. When finally diagnosed with stage 4 ovarian cancer at 42, her first response was relief. Thank God, finally someone believes me. Her husband, Gene Wilder's lament haunts. Gilda didn't have to die. Throughout history, male patients with similar symptoms received the gentler diagnosis of neurasthenia, while women were presumed guilty until proven innocent. Despite affecting 176 million women worldwide, roughly Brazil's population, endometriosis remains shockingly under-researched. Medical textbooks devote fewer than 10 pages to it, usually focusing on infertility rather than daily life impact. PubMed returns about 1,800 pages for endometriosis versus over 30,000 for liver disease, which affects comparable numbers. The unknowns are staggering: how it begins, why symptoms vary wildly, or why the century-old backward menstruation theory remains unproven. Many gynecologists can't identify lesions, which appear in multiple colors. The few excision specialists, with 56 to 66% cure rates, have waitlists stretching years and rarely accept insurance. The staging system ignores quality of life entirely, missing that minimal disease can cause severe symptoms, while extensive disease may be silent. Beneath the medical mystery lay profound neglect. She was always mom, never mom or mommy. Her anorexic mother, 5'5" and under 100 pounds at childbirth, kept their thin-walled trailer perpetually dark, blankets covering windows, fans running year-round, a tomb-like environment where time dissolved. Hunger dominated her childhood. Her mother strictly controlled food, serving bland meals in tiny portions. After her mother retreated each evening, she would sneak into the kitchen like a highly trained operative, stealing pretzels while her father sat oblivious before the television. At school, she became the queen of "Are you going to eat that?" surviving on classmates' leftovers. She spent so much time alone that by age 7, she wondered if she was a ghost, hiding in her father's closet, listening to the dryer's mechanical heartbeat. Her mother gave her one precious gift, books, never denying her one, regardless of cost. When illness struck years later, with persistent nausea, she feared she was developing her mother's eating disorder. Then came a disturbing revelation at Olive Garden when she vomited unexpectedly and experienced alarming euphoria, a deep, resonant calm that felt dangerous. She recognized this fatal ecstasy, understanding its deadly potential. Teachers became her lifeline. Mrs. Niemann encouraged her writing in first grade, making her feel proud for the first time. In middle school, Mrs. McHugh risked her job to save her from her home situation. The emancipation hearing lasted less than 20 minutes. Her parents drove to the courthouse but never entered. In an ill-fitting secondhand suit, she read her statement and won her freedom. Senior year brought a large green envelope from Sarah Lawrence College, her acceptance letter, more meaningful than her emancipation document. When she showed her favorite English teacher, he looked genuinely shocked. "You did it! You got in! You actually got in!" His initial doubt stung, but this letter proved her triumph. Working in medical records at the local hospital while sick, savings gone, and medical debt crushing, she transformed the job into opportunity. She used the hospital's medical library to research endometriosis relentlessly, creating a thorough medical history. When she returned to Dr. Wagstaff with her research, he agreed to another surgery, warning he'd discharge her if nothing was found. When she woke, the nurse confirmed her suspicion. It was her appendix, chronically infected and abnormally long. She'd been right all along. Years later, she stopped fighting and redesigned her life around her limitations. She adopted Whimsy, a rescue dog with emotional problems. We're an ideal match. Caring for another being forced her outside daily. She embraced afternoon naps, found tolerable foods, went to bed early. When she lost something, she imagined another space opening up inside of me where something new could grow. In fall 2015, she presented at Stanford Medicine X, connecting with other medical zebras, patients who had transformed rare diseases into purpose. Through online forums, she discovered countless women telling identical stories: dismissed pain, sexual difficulties, chronic nausea, extreme fatigue. Women from all backgrounds united by invisible suffering. On her 10th anniversary of legal adulthood, she reflected on what she'd achieved: fulfilling work, living by the sea, having a dog, close friendships. What she hadn't anticipated was losing her health, dancing briefly reclaimed, food and sex diminished. Yet she found wisdom in her therapist's words. There is an incredible freedom in letting go of the demand that this moment be anything other than what it is. She remained absurdly alive, fully present in a moment she couldn't yet categorize. In a world where women's pain is routinely dismissed, this story demands we listen differently. Your body isn't hysterical. The system is broken. Trust your pain. Document everything. When medicine fails to believe you, believing yourself becomes survival.